our bodies just work so hard all day trying to overcome all the neglect and all the abuse that we throw at it. The body is an incredible organism.
Welcome to the Happy Engineer Podcast, the place where we help engineers to build your career, balance your life, and be happy. My name is Zach White, a former engineer now turned CEO, lifestyle engineering coach, and your host. I believe that success without fulfillment is failure. Join me each week as we bring you an inspiring leader or message to help you enjoy both. Thanks for investing time with me today. Now let's do this. Do you know the most important function of your body and why it's incredibly important to your success? When I heard the answer, it made so much sense and connects perfectly with the coaching I do for engineering leaders around the world. And here's another question. Are you struggling with stress? I'm talking about negative stress and too much of it. What if your negative stress at work is actually caused by something completely different and has nothing to do with your work at all? I'm really excited for you to meet the health detective and world's best self-care coach, Susan Birch. She holds a master's degree in health sciences and postgraduate diplomas in sports medicine, musculoskeletal rehabilitation, musculoskeletal medicine, and nutrition from Otago University. Susan has spent a lifetime challenging the mainstream dogma about exercise and nutrition. She understands the challenges people like you and me face in finding accurate, science-based nutrition and health information. But beyond her 40 years of experience changing lives through changing the body, the real reason you will be changed by this conversation is her courage. Susan contracted meningococcal meningitis when she was 2 years old, which left her with seemingly insurmountable odds against academic success. As you already heard, she overcame those odds and is now one of the brightest minds in her field. So pay close attention to this one and grab your notebook. Your body, and therefore your life, depends on it. And after you listen, then join the Happy Engineer community online and share your next action step in our free group. You can find the link in the show notes, and I promise you will accelerate your results in career and life when you engage in growth together with your peers. Plus, I'd just love to see you in there and say hi. If you're an engineering leader who's ever looked at someone with a bigger job and a bigger paycheck than yours and thought, seriously? If they can do it, I can do it. Let's not name names, but I get it. That's why we created Career Clarity Calls, for one simple reason. A lot of engineers, probably including you, just want a deeper sense of clarity on the barriers holding you back that you need to overcome in order to accelerate your career and achieve your dreams. These short 15-minute calls give you a chance to work with one of our coaches without any commitment or pressure to get out your credit card. Scheduling is easy. Just go to careerclaritycall.com. And a number of people who do these calls ask if they can continue with a deep dive coaching session, which is usually $500. It's 75 minutes and completely life-changing. So I've decided to carve out a number of these calls for free specifically to help our podcast listeners who know you want to reach the next level. Let's jump on the phone and get you the help and clarity you need. Again, that link is in the show notes, or just memorize it. CareerClarityCall.com. Click the big orange button, select a time, and let's build your career. Susan, it is so great to be with you. Thanks for joining me today on the Happy Engineer Podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, Zach. I've been looking forward to this.
Me too. Susan, you and I had the privilege of getting connected through an absolutely brilliant mastermind, the world's best mastermind. And for those who've been following the Happy Engineer podcast, they may recognize Laban Ditchburn, who did an episode with me not long ago, who's the world's best courage coach. And Susan joins us today as the world's best self-care coach. And I love that. Susan, you have such a heart for health and nutrition and how that is a foundation for our life. So I want to get into all of your expertise and how much you have to offer for us. I mean, this is such an important domain. But before we go into the meat of now and this part of your life, I think it's really important to back up a bit, maybe begin at the beginning, if you will, right? Tell us a little bit about your story growing up and how that led your path towards falling in love with the importance of health and nutrition. Just take us back to the beginning, Susan.
Well, I grew up in rural New Zealand in rather a large family, and I contracted meningococcal meningitis when I was about 2 years old. And that left me with quite a few struggles in terms of learning. I knew inside that my brain was smart, but I really struggled to express myself. I still struggle pronouncing words, so sometimes I'll pause and have to think about a different word that I can use. And so I wasn't a good student at school. I was probably a parent's worst nightmare as a teenager, and I got into a bit of trouble, got into the wrong crowd, and had a few rather disastrous things happen that framed a lot of how I felt about myself and how I viewed myself.
Sure. Susan, really quick, can you tell me, I think about like the earliest memories I have, maybe I was 4 or 5 years old, maybe certainly by 6, I have some memories, but what's for you with that experience? Like, what are the earliest memories you have and what that was like to know that you had this disease that was inhibiting your mind? Like, what do you remember from those early, early years?
I remember my dad was very interested in debating. So my parents didn't come from a background of a lot of education, but they were very smart. And my dad did a lot of reading and they followed politics. And every night at the dinner table, he would instigate debates from when we were very tiny and get us talking about things. And he would always swap sides. So one night he'd be on one side and the next night he'd be on the other side, you know, just really challenging our thinking and our thought processes. And my brothers and sisters were all very smart. My brother, who's a year younger than me, was incredibly articulate and very, very bright. I remember feeling ridiculed and humiliated because I couldn't keep up with the conversations. And I can remember the frustration inside of me and my brain wanting to be able to answer, but I just couldn't find the words and I couldn't string the sentences together. And my way of learning is quite different. I have to really understand something. I can't read something and remember it. I have to draw mind maps and just really thoroughly understand the mechanisms. So that was one of the early memories, and the feeling of humiliation and frustration that came with
it. Yeah. I mean, first of all, Susan, my heart gets tugged even hearing you describe that. How did your siblings interact with you and respond to the fact that this was a really different situation for you than what they were experiencing growing up?
It wasn't talked about. I only found out, you know, I only knew what happened following conversations with mum, because I'd say, why am I so dumb? Why is everyone else so clever? And then she said to me, look, you're a very bright, articulate little girl until you got sick. And you didn't start talking again until you were nearly 4. So it wasn't talked about in the family, but I do remember lying in bed one night hearing my parents talk about, oh, what's Susan going to do? How's she going to get on in life? Their solution to that was to teach me to be a really good housewife. So I was able to cook. By the time I was 8 and 9, I could look after the family with my 5 siblings and my young brothers who were babies. We had a coal range and we only had generator power for the village, so we didn't have power all the time and didn't have a lot of money. So mum and dad would go out at night and shoot possums and mum would prepare the skins and sell them for extra income. And I'd be left at home with all the kids and the babies, and I'd have to heat the bottle on the cold range and get up and change the baby in the middle of the night.
Wow.
And I was 8 and 9 and 10 years old, and I was really good at it, and it served me well with my own children, that's for sure. But it did leave me feeling, what could I do? I was a very angry teenager and very rebellious. Mm.
I really appreciate you sharing the story. It really does paint such a powerful picture for what you've overcome to be as tremendous in the work that you do today. And we're going to get into that. I mean, your credentials and bio, we read at the beginning of this episode. And like, Susan, you're a total rock star. And most people would never guess that was the kind of adversity that you faced growing up. And for many of us, myself included, like born in Indianapolis, Indiana, you know, in the city, the life that I experienced in terms of all those things, just completely different. And so, you know, as you moved through those teenage years and on, like, when did things start to turn for you away from simply like, hey, your path through life is going to be through get married and take care of a family, to starting to break through in this area of education and developing the skills that you have now?
Well, I started learning to read and write when I went to work. I had an office job, of all things. And my boss was pretty... It was a grumpy old coot, but he was pretty amazing. And he never used to say much, but he turned up one day with this little pocket-sized dictionary and he handed it to me and he said, "You're a smart girl. Use the bloody thing."
Oh, my goodness. Wow. What a great mentor.
Yeah. And that was the first time I remember anybody telling me that I was smart. And so I carried that dictionary around for years and years, and it had phonetic spelling. And I just would open a page and learn a word. And I did that for years. And so slowly my ability to pronounce the words improved, and then my ability to read improved. And then as you start reading, then your ability to put sentences together improves. So that was a really good start. And then I had a bit of a tumultuous time as a young lady going out into the world, and that left me fairly scarred, I think, and a lot of body image problems and a lot of self-disgust and hatred. But then I met my husband and married him. And he's a really nice guy, but him and his mates all smoked a lot of dope and did a lot of drinking. And I actually didn't do that because I knew from my earlier experiences that I couldn't go down that path and I couldn't tolerate alcohol. So I didn't really get into that. But it was a good, cruisy, sort of like laid back. Nobody had any dreams or ambitions very much. And then we started a family. And it was when I was holding that first baby in my arms. Mm. And I was like, I want more for my life than yes. this. I want more for my children than this. And although my early life was challenging, it was probably fairly reflective of the time that I grew up in and the environment that I grew up in. It can sound quite horrendous, but, you know, there were really good things as well. And my parents really believed in education, and they had very good moral standards, and Dad really believed in self-responsibility, and that was taught to us at a young age. And, you know, him and I built a boat in the shed, a great big heavy old blanket thing, but anyway, we built that. And that was a time when, you know, we had lots of conversations, kind of philosophical conversations about life. You know, we get out of it what we put into it. So I did have that good basis behind me. And so, you know, when I had started having my family, I was like, okay, I've got to do something. Mm-hmm. I had this feeling inside of me, which is still inside of me, that I can change the world, was that feeling.
Yes.
I just need a plan to do it.
Mm. Susan, if you go back to holding your first child and that flame ignited for the first time, was there anything in particular that came into your picture of what that meant to have more from life? Was there, you know, something that you really wanted, you know, to live in a nicer home or to live in a certain place? Or what was it? Can you describe it all for us? What was in your vision at that time?
It was very vague. It was very vague. And I helped support the family. I milked cows. I was an AB technician, which means you artificially inseminate cows, get them pregnant. Docking. I did farm work. And I really enjoyed it. I'm a real outdoor girl and I really love the animals and I really enjoyed it. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. So I sat my school C and university entrance and got those, and then I enrolled extramurally in one of our universities, and I just did some random papers. I studied art history, I did sociology, I studied some education papers, I did some philosophy papers. And it was when I had my third child that a little brochure came around in the letterbox about a course in exercise and nutrition. And I was interested in health. I had been bulimic up until I had the kids, and I got over that, but I was still very conscious. I was still very conscious. I still had real serious body image issues and this kind of self-hatred about, you know, about my body. So I was interested in health and nutrition. So I was milking cows and doing AB, and I went off to the Polytech, which was about an hour and a half or hour and a quarter away. Said, I can't study full-time, but can I do this course part-time? So they said yes. And then I absolutely just fell in love with it. Like physiology, I was just like, oh my, I found my world. And it was about being well, not being sick. Like I had this sickness and I don't really like sickness, but I loved how our body worked so hard to keep us well. So then I said to them, well, if I can pass the exam, even though I didn't go to class for the other papers, can I have the certificate at the end of the year? And they said, well, you'll never be able to do that. And I said, well, if I can I have the certificate? So they said, yep, okay. So I did that and I passed.
Amazing. Let me jump in. This is such a great story. I want to hear more, but I want to come back to what you described is such a common experience that I hear from engineering leaders all the time, Susan. And I have the same story. Maybe not everybody's heard this, but in 2009, for me, I had a new friend who's now my best friend and business partner in my private equity investing. His name is Dave. And Dave was an entrepreneur, a serial entrepreneur, just involved in all kinds of businesses. And I was a W-2 engineering leader, you know, working the 9-to-5 or, you know, we joke, 8-to-8, whatever it actually is. And I met with Dave, we were hanging out, and he ended up giving me a couple of books, one of which was Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which has changed a lot of people's lives. And whether you like Robert Kiyosaki or not doesn't matter, but just for me, that was one of those catalyst moments where I felt something ignite in myself that, man, I want more out of life than simply working a job and at a safe, secure company my whole life. And I started my first business as a side hustle at that time and built my career. And I think it's common where we feel the fire, but it's an unclear direction. The vision is still fuzzy. It's feel vague. Like the desire is burning, but I don't know where yet to take it. And I just appreciate that about your story so much. Like, I just knew that something needed to change without knowing clearly yet exactly what it would be. And you simply started moving towards options and ideas and exploring. And I think it's super powerful. And I can relate to that. I know so many engineering leaders can as well. Maybe the, you know, engineering leader listening right now feels that way in this moment. There's a fire burning, but I don't know what direction to take it. So I just wanted to ask you before we move on to your journey into health and nutrition, if somebody is in that place, they feel the desire, but they don't know what direction to take it, what would you say to them, having walked the road you have, and any wisdom for that person?
I suppose the word courage comes to mind. Being prepared to take a chance on yourself, being prepared to step out of what's comfortable and what's safe and just give it a go. We all have different natures in that respect, and I think maybe I might jump quite quickly, but I still think even people who have a slightly different nature and like to take things a bit more slowly, I still think just swallowing the fear and having a go, because what's the worst that can happen? And that's what I always ask myself. I'm like, what's the worst that can happen? And look, I've been self-employed for 40 years now. And I always went, what's the worst that can happen? I'll have to get a proper job.
Bearable. Bearable.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, well, I can do that because other people do that.
Amazing. I really appreciate you sharing that. So, Susan, you fell in love with the body, with this idea of physiology and health and nutrition. And what you said a moment ago resonates so deeply for me, that it was about being well, not mm-hmm. just about understanding sickness. So can you describe that distinction a bit and how that became your focus?
Well, the body is an incredible organism. Our body just works so hard all day trying to overcome all the neglect and all the abuse that we throw at it to keep surviving and keep producing energy and to keep all those systems inside functioning. And we have systems inside that are billions and billions of reactions inside ourselves every minute that these are taking place. And it's just amazes me that we do all the stuff from the outside that trashes it, and our thinking that trashes it, and we don't give it the support and the nourishment, the care and the love that it deserves. And then we want it to keep us going until we're sort of 90 or something. If you think about having a car, and if you're told you've got one car for the rest of your life, how well would you look after that car?
Mm.
I think we're a little bit used to treating our bodies like we treat our cars. You know, it gets old and decrepit and we trade it in and get a new one, but we just can't do that with our bodies.
It would be nice, but a lot of sci-fi movies have been brooded around that concept, but we get one go with the body. So I think this is a good way to frame what the body's working so hard to do all the time. I've never necessarily pictured it this way, that all the negative stuff that I'm throwing at it or allowing to come into my world through my thinking, through what I eat and drink, environmental pressures, stress that I take on, etc. The body's working overtime just to overcome all that and keep me functioning in as healthy a way as possible. Can you tell us, Susan, for you and your experience in coaching and doing this work, what are the biggest factors that we're throwing at our body that it's just, seriously, I have to overcome this again? Like, what are those main negative factors that people are throwing at it?
I'm going to answer that in a backwards way. So the body's job is to produce energy. When we have energy, everything in our body functions. So every system in our body has to produce energy. Every cell has mitochondria. The job of those mitochondria is to produce ATP and energy for us. When we throw bad stuff at it, whether it's thoughts, whether it's nutrition, whether it's environmental toxins, we affect the ability of our mitochondria to create energy. And when that happens, we end up with oxidative stress. So instead of the mitochondria being able to convert, you know, it uses fats and glucose and goes through all its little systems and its electron transport chain and all those things, it produces ATP, energy, and it produces water. And if we don't have the right nutrients going into those systems, we don't produce water. We produce oxygen molecules that become free radicals, reactive oxygen species, and they start to damage our body. That's why everybody takes antioxidants to try and prevent that oxidation process happening. And so we end up with this oxidative stress happening, and then that causes inflammation, and then inflammation starts to lead down the pathway of chronic disease. And it starts slowly. It's like rust in your car. It's like a tiny little bit of rust. And if you don't deal with it, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So our body gives us symptoms to warn us. And you start getting headaches. You start getting some pain in a joint. You're not sleeping so well. You start putting a little bit of weight on around your middle. your mood starts to change, you're a lot less tolerant, your ability to work and focus reduces. And those are all symptoms of your body saying, my energy production is being dismantled, disrupted.
Wow. So you're speaking my language, Susan, because I'm a mechanical engineer by training. And once an engineer, always an engineer, I believe. Yeah. And this correlating it to the car pictures, I've got my first car, a 1992 Ford Explorer, in my mind. And I remember vividly the day that the hole in the running board showed up, because underneath that paint, metal had been rusting for who knows how long. And then suddenly there were these giant holes in the running boards on both sides of my Ford. Tell me then, the mitochondria, this energy production, and feel free to geek out as much as you want. I love the science, and I'm sure the engineer listening loves the science. What has to be true for healthy energy production to occur versus this oxidative stress-producing energy production? So what are the inputs, if you will, or the conditions necessary for complete and healthy energy production? Or does it vary so greatly we couldn't even begin to describe it?
No. There are very specific inputs that are needed. And some of those are micronutrients and trace elements. So we have, I can't remember how many enzymes we have in our body. Enzyme function is really important in this process. And we need nutrients. And some of the key nutrients we need are magnesium. Magnesium affects 3,751 different enzymes in the body.
Oh, my goodness.
It's amazing. If you think that every cell in our heart muscle has 10,000 mitochondria that are producing energy. And it's just producing millions and millions of ATP every second, every minute. So it needs the raw material to produce that. We need magnesium. Magnesium ATP is what is really produced at the end of that electron transport chain. So that's super important. We need copper and an enzyme called ceruloplasmin, which is really important. Not too much iron. So having dysfunctional iron in our body and unbound iron getting into all our tissues affects with this oxygen and contributes to this rust. So, that's just a start. But then for copper to get into ceruloplasmin to work, we've got to have the retinal form of vitamin A, not the beta-carotene form that we get out of our carrots. And so that's when we can then start bringing it back to our food. I know it's going on in the States. It's huge in New Zealand about eating animal foods and things like that, and it's unhealthy and bad for the environment. But we evolved over millions of years to require the nutrients that were available from the food that we had in our environment. And we know that animal foods provide those nutrients to us. We were able to eat plant foods. We adapted to include plant foods. And so that's where plant foods become a source of calories. So I think of them as being more of the power supply. If you think of having a chemical factory, let's say the factory is going to make some paint and it wants to make blue paint. It needs specific inputs to be able to make blue paint, but it needs a power supply. So those carbohydrates become one option for your power supply, and the fat that you eat is another option for the power supply. But they don't really contain the nutrients that you need, containing the chemicals you need to be able to make that blue paint. And so that is where I'm a very strong believer in an ancestral nutritional approach. The foods that our ancestors ate, and a lot of those were animal products, provide all those nutrients in the bioavailable way that our body recognizes in the right quantities.
Super interesting. I love what you're describing. And I'm just, as an engineer, there's just the kind of rational, logical circuitry in me, right? It makes total sense that the body would be well adapted to use whatever food was available and is available today. And it's easy to see or argue that a lot of what sits on the shelf at the grocery store today is not something that was ever available at any time in history prior to this modern industrial age. I know we could spend a whole podcast, like 100 episodes, digging into all of the details of this. And I'm starting to understand why what you do, or at least part of your business, is called the health detective. So many moving parts and so many things to consider. For somebody who's really interested in getting one or two of these foundational pieces right. And I love this paint factory metaphor. Maybe you continue with that. But Susan, what would you say are the most fundamental things someone needs to get right to have a good chance at optimizing energy production and therefore health and wellness in their body?
Well, I like to test, not guess. And that's kind of the science geeky part in me. So I look at blood tests, organic acids, hormonal testing, whole range of testing, not to diagnose disease, but to just see where the body actually is and where the issues might be coming from. And so I can use blood testing in a different way that a doctor does to have a look for nutritional deficiencies and see where some of those baseline things might be at. So the first step would be to identify those and then improve them. And if we can improve them with real food inputs, that is better because our body recognizes that and it works well. Sometimes we might need to use supplements, but supplements come with a whole, you know, I could go on for a podcast about the drawbacks of supplements and what's in them and whether our body can use them properly. So we need to get those inputs in properly. So if you take the paint factory and you're trying to make blue paint, but the shipping container's been held up because of, you know, COVID and the wharves aren't working and you can't get the raw materials for blue paint, your paint factory's not going to be able to create that output. And so it's the same for our body. So the first thing is to get is to assess and see where you're at and get those nutrients in the right way. And then it's to look at the systems in the body as well. So our metabolic system, making sure that things like blood pressure are good, making sure that your insulin levels are within range, that your glucose isn't too high, and just look at how you're responding to those macronutrients that are coming in as well. And it's a matter of finding a balance between those. And everybody's different. And although I have some nutritional philosophies, I respect that everyone is different and everyone comes from a different place. And it's about tuning in and helping them where they're at.
Well, it's a brilliant answer. You know, rather than taking a specific common approach, like everybody needs to eat these certain foods or et cetera, or, you know, here's a recommended nutrition plan that people ought to follow. Test, don't guess. I think the engineer and me, and I'm sure engineering leaders listening, will appreciate that philosophy. Like, let's go get the data that will allow us to make an educated, informed, test-based decision on how you can adapt the inputs. Maybe it's a dumb question, but I'll ask it anyway, Susan, because for me, what I've found so often is even then, once we know what we should do, getting ourselves to do it is one of the hardest parts. So let's say I'm your client, you and I go through this really brilliant set of tests and you can provide these great recommendations. What have you found are the keys to actually following through and helping people be successful as a coach and the work you do with supporting wellness and nutrition for your clients? What is it that actually gets somebody bought in to the process and to actually making this their new reality?
That is such a good question. And that varies a lot with individuals. A lot of people really find the testing very valuable because they can see some hard data. And so even though, you know, when you get up in the morning and you look in the mirror and you might go, oh, I'm putting on a bit of weight, I don't feel that great, I haven't got that much energy, but oh, I'm all right because I've got all the, you know, my focus is on achieving all this other stuff. When they see the data, they can go, I understand why now. And then, like you say, making change can be difficult. We talked earlier about some people can be fast adopters of new ideas and other people like to go more slowly. And so I think it's the ability to manage both. There's some fast tricks you can have to get some results for those people who just want to get stuck in. And then there is a much slower process where you just make really small changes. And then coming back to people's why do you want to do this? What can you see for your future? I trained as a neurochange practitioner. It's another science approach. That's how we can learn in very small steps to rewire the neuropathways in our brain and break some of those old habits.
Yes.
And adopt new habits. You know, one of the key components about that is that we have goals, you know, take New Year's, you know, and everyone wants, I'm going to lose 10 kg in New Zealand, I don't know, 20 pounds in the States. I'm going to lose 20 pounds this year. But the problem is it's a lofty goal, but their belief system doesn't match the goal. It's a matter of getting into that belief system, understanding that belief system, getting people to dissect their own belief systems and being able to converge the belief system with the goal.
That's really good. Susan, I'll add at least one compelling why for myself and for any engineering leader who's listening to this and may be tempted to simply geek out on the fun science you've shared with us, but not do anything with it. I coach all my clients that even more important than time, there's a whole discipline and billion-dollar industry around time management, right? I believe time is to be invested and energy is to be managed. And the production of energy in your career and in your life, the ability to access energy, to focus on how much energy are you bringing to the task at hand. So as an engineering leader, if you're writing code, if you're a software developer, your ability to fully focus and get into that flow state and bring maximum energy into that work will differentiate your performance. You know, if you're a manager of a team or you're a director or vice president and you're presenting to the group or you're at the front of the room sharing the vision, the energy that you can bring in that moment will differentiate your performance. And let's face it, having an engineering degree does not make you different than anyone else who has that degree. Like, how are you going to, over the course of your career, separate yourself from others if that's your goal? You know, if you want to see your career really accelerate and grow, which I know a lot of our, you know, engineering leaders out there do, but also at home with your spouse, with your kids, you know, the things that you love to do, your hobbies. When you get home and you're too tired to even enjoy your hobbies or to spend time with your kids in a way that's loving and meaningful, that's a huge problem. And so the idea of what Susan is sharing, that energy, when suboptimal, is something that you can directly influence through your actions and the knowledge that you could gain in working with someone like Susan. Take that seriously, because a 5% or 10% change in available energy is a massive difference in what you can create in your life. And I imagine for most of us, there's an even bigger change to be had than that. We don't realize how far off of optimal we are. I don't know, Susan, would you agree with that statement in terms of the opportunity available?
Absolutely. I absolutely love what you said. You've sold it to me.
Well, I mean, honestly, and so it's way outside my domain of expertise, but Susan, I'm super encouraged by your approach and can't recommend highly enough that people take that seriously. Like, rather than saying, hey, what's my first step? Drink more water, sleep more. Typical answers we hear a lot, to say, look, the first step is to get serious about getting the data. Go learn about your body in a way that's personalized and very detailed. And I'll circle back to your original statement, in a way that's focused on finding what's missing for optimal health and wellness, rather than doing those tests for the purpose of finding a disease or why you are sick. Mm-hmm. I think that's a completely different lens, Susan, that you're bringing to the question, and it's super powerful. I'm encouraged. Whew. In the interest of time, we got to land the plane here, Susan. I'm so sad because there's 100 more questions I'd love to ask, and maybe we'll have to do a part two in the future. But health as a foundation for all the success we create in our career, in our life, in our families. If the engineering leader out there wants to create success, they want to experience happiness. This is the Happy Engineer podcast, you know. I believe that great coaching, great engineering, great health, it's all common that the questions we ask matter. Questions lead, answers follow. If we want to get better answers in our life, we better ask better questions. So for someone out there who's heard this chat and they want to get to that next level in energy and health in their life, what would be a question that you would lead them with today?
Well, there are quite a few questions that I think are really relevant and probably ones that people ask themselves all the time about their why, about what step do I need to take today, what do I need to learn. But the question that I ask myself every single morning and I think is really valuable is, what's my ideal day today? What does my ideal day look like today?
What's my ideal day today? I love that. I love that. And what does that look like for you to ask that question and then answer it, Susan? Do you journal about it or spend some time meditating, or it's just a kind of a simple thought exercise? Would you mind sharing? Like, how do you practice that question?
So I have a reset practice every morning. And so I have a number of questions that I ask myself each morning. That is one of those questions. And then I write down how my ideal day would look, and not just look, but I really tap into how my ideal day is going to feel. So it's not about just making a list of I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. It's about how am I going to feel while I'm doing that. Yeah, just really tapping
I love that.
In, you know, how it serves that bigger purpose.
This is an area engineering leaders, we need to take more care to pay attention to, not just our to-do list, but our to be and to feel lists as well. That's really good. So Susan, I know people are going to want to connect with you, discover your work, reach out to you for support in the coaching and health detective work that they need. So where can people go to get more Susan Birch in their life?
So the best place to find me is at susanbirch.co.nz, my website. And from there, they'll be able to find my podcasts, links to my Facebook rants, and all the other kind of work I do. I've got lots of free resources on my website. I think that's the best place, and they can find my contact details and reach out.
Brilliant. As always, we'll put all the links to where you can connect with Susan in the show notes. You can find those at thehappyengineerpodcast.com. And I can't say enough about Susan, just her approach, her heart, and what she's come through in her life to get to this point of not just brilliant expertise, but a passionate heart of service in the work she does as the world's best self-care coach and the health detective. She is tremendous. So if you're even remotely considering taking action on this, please connect with Susan. And Susan, thanks again so much for making time today. This has been awesome.
Oh, thank you. This has been a lot of fun and I've really enjoyed it. Thanks, Zach.
This episode has been brought to you by Massive Action and Decisive Leadership. Okay. No, those are not companies you can just buy success from, but they are qualities you must master if you want to build your career and balance your life. So to help you out, I'm offering my most popular ebook, 49 Things You Must Do to Accelerate Your Engineering Career, for free on our homepage at oasisofcourage.com. If you will take action on just one of these simple tips each week, I promise you will experience a whole new level of results in the coming year. The problem is that we make everything too complex. Success at work is not rocket science. I mean, you might actually be a rocket scientist, and yet you're not getting the success you desire. One engineering senior manager told me that taking action on tip 34 by itself helped him feel happier at work and allowed him to start spending more quality time with his kids. To get your free copy of the ebook, just visit oasisofcourage.com, scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, and click download now. What a fun conversation with Susan Birch. I love that lady. Happy engineers, it's just you and me for a moment. Let's debrief and maybe talk first about a quick elephant in the room. Like, why do we keep coming back to health and nutrition on this show so often? Come on, Zach, isn't this a career podcast? I just want to address that head on, that every single career action that you are going to take demands energy. Every single strategy, every single tactic, every single thought that you think that takes you forward in your career and in your life demands energy. And I love how Susan described that the body's job is to produce that energy. So if you're not taking care of your body, if you're not taking care of your health, this energy production factory that allows you to create and experience the quality of life that you desire, then you're missing out. Every action demands energy. And I remember when I was a senior engineering manager back at Whirlpool, our team was often clawing away at 1 or 2% improvements in things like product cost or our cycle times and tack times on the manufacturing line, just to make little improvements, thinking about our product quality, SIR, service incident rate, you know, a 1% improvement was something we truly celebrated. Well, listen, if you can improve your available energy to think, to decide, to act, to produce results in your career, if you can get a 1% improvement every day, and that 1% improvement in energy allows you to get 1% further ahead, 1% bigger results than your peers who are not able to bring the same energy that you can into every single situation. If you do that 1% every single day, you know, in 365 days of the year, you don't just get a 365% improvement. If you're compounding that 1%, continuing to get further ahead, continuing to make better decisions, continuing to drive bigger actions because you have more energy, if you do that compounding over the whole year, that's like 3,700% or something. You do the math. You're an engineer. But my point is, it absolutely compounds over the long term. It's exponential in what you can create when you have access to more energy. It also makes relationships and recreation and all your hobbies and the things that you love outside the office better too. So why do we keep coming back to health and nutrition and these topics? It's because at the end of the day, if you don't have the energy that you need to go get the results that you desire at work, then it won't matter what strategy or what tactic we put in front of you, you're not going to get the results. So a strong mind exists inside of a strong body. I just want to encourage you, I want to challenge you to take that seriously. Just as you would getting your bachelor's degree or your master's degree or your PhD in engineering, this is an area of life that I would encourage you to get a master's degree in. Not literally. I don't mean go back to school. What I mean is take it seriously. Bring the habits and disciplines into your life that you need to produce energy. Now, Susan touched on a really, really key thing, and we didn't have a lot of time to dig into it, but I want to go back when we talked about making the goal a reality. How do we get ourselves to do what we know we should do? How do we take our knowledge and consistently put it into action? I hear all the time people's reasons for why you're not getting the results that you want. I'd encourage you right now, think about your biggest goal in your career. What are you out seeking to accomplish? Is it a promotion? Is it an industry change, moving to a different company, maybe a more prestigious company? Maybe it's shifting from manufacturing engineering into R&D or vice versa. What's that big goal for you right now in your career? Just bring that into your mind. And then be honest, what's holding you back from getting there? Why are you not making the progress that you want as fast as you want right now in your career? Well, I'm gonna call BS on any excuse, any reason that you're bringing to the table. I am calling total BS, belief systems. Belief systems. Your belief system doesn't match the goal. If you feel stuck, if you've been spinning your wheels, if you're not feeling that sense of deep and meaningful progress towards the goal, towards the vision, then I call BS. It's your belief system. What is it that you actually think and believe consciously or subconsciously every single day? because your belief systems are going to consistently dictate what you think, what you feel, how you act, and therefore your results. And the truth is, 95% or more of your mind is the subconscious. It's following the same patterns and the same thoughts that you've been thinking every day, again and again and again. And if we don't change those belief systems, then we don't consistently create new and bigger results. So if you're not making the progress you want, if you know some things, but you're not consistently doing them, I call BS. Check your belief system. Somewhere inside of you is resistance. Maybe you don't believe that that goal is actually possible for you. Maybe you don't actually believe that you're capable or willing to put in the work that it takes to get there. Maybe you don't feel smart enough. Maybe you don't feel like you have a big enough network or you don't know the right people. Maybe you believe that you don't have enough money to invest in yourself, into coaching or training or degrees that you're going to need. Maybe you believe that your resume isn't good enough for that opportunity. Maybe you believe that you're no good at interviewing. Maybe you believe that your marriage is too far gone. There's no way to recover it. Maybe you believe, fill in the blank, belief systems. All too often, our belief systems have not leveled up to match the next level goal. Amazing chat with Susan. I hope that you will take it seriously in getting energy up. Manage your energy. Energy management is far more important than time management. Energy management is a huge differentiator in your life. So get after it. Hey, I hope you enjoyed the conversation. I would love to support you in any way we can. We've got an upcoming Q&A episode. We're going to be doing those on the regular. So if you want to send in a question about this conversation with Susan, I'd love to hear it directly. You can always email me, zach@oasisofcourage.com. It's zach@oasisofcourage.com. Or just jump out to the podcast website. All the links and everything you need, plus our bonus content for every episode, can be found there at thehappyengineerpodcast.com. So have fun. Crush comfort, create courage, and let's do this. My friend, that's all we've got for this episode of the Happy Engineer Podcast. Thank you again for investing your time with me today. If you're like me, then maybe you'll take some notes and share this episode with your fellow engineers. Why? Because it will help you learn deeper, remember these insights, and take action. So share this episode with two or three friends just like you who are committed to building their career. Lastly, make sure to link up with us at oasisofcourage.com. Grab our free tools for career growth there in the resource hub and schedule a free call with our coaching team today. Please just share this podcast with anyone who you think might enjoy it. Until next time, remember to crush comfort, create courage, and let's do this.